Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. We are your hosts, the fabulous Freebirds of the Georgia Wrestling History Network, Jerry Bam Bam Oates, Bobby Jack Simmons, and Michael P.S. Norris. What's going on, guys?
Not much. I understand Bobby's not doing so good.
Sound like I'm talking out of a barrel, but other than that, I'm all right, I guess.
And he was with me all weekend. That's enough to make anybody not feel good.
Oh. So you telling me you made him sick?
Well, let me tell you something, and Bobby can attest to this. We did the thing at the Ted Allen Memorial Show on Saturday night at Billerica, and somehow or another, my name ended up on the list of legends. Now, why, I don't know. I didn't pay anybody or slip anybody any extra money to have them do that, but my name ended up. So as they were introducing everybody and we were filling the ring up, I was about midway of the group, and I got rope burns on my legs getting into the ring.
Climbing into the ring.
That's why you threw your back out.
No. My back was already hurting before I got there. But Curtis Smith told Bobby those rings, those ropes were so tight they could have used it as a bow and arrow. But we ended up, what was it, 35 or 40 of us in the ring?
There was a bunch of us. If somebody had fell down, Bedlam would have broke out.
It was a two-ring battle royal with one ring, let me put it that way.
Oh, jeez.
But it was enjoyable. I got to see some people I hadn't seen in a long, long time. I saw Jerry Oates and Randy Rhoads for the first time in 31 years. And I got to talk to them a little bit. Thunderbolt Patterson, the first time I'd seen him since 1983 or 84. And, of course, got the pleasure of seeing Bobby and Scrappy and Charlie and Ronnie all working together. Probably for the first time ever. Was there ever a card where all four of you worked at the same time?
No, because we all came along. Well, me and Ronnie worked together, and me and Charlie worked together. I never worked a card with Scrappy because he started after I quit. And it's like Ronnie says, it was a happy time, yet it was a sad time because, man, we were all standing there. Poor Ronnie was crying. I was wanting to cry because we was all sitting there, you know, where'd the time go? I mean, it was like turning back the clock 30 years, and just it was just as much fun. It's just the body parts didn't want to work like the mind said they should, but it was we had a good time.
Ronnie even got to punch out one of the heels.
Well, he's always a babyface referee anyway, so, you know. He punched me for saying that, but...
But they had a good turnout. I never have heard the final numbers, but I've heard anywhere from 400 to 500 people.
Yeah, it was pretty close. I mean, that's what I was telling you, Jerry, before we started. It was like old times. It was actually like working a good house show. I mean, the people were responsive, and I had a lot of fun.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well,
that's what you enjoyed that. I was honored. All kidding aside, I was honored to even been included in that. I was standing there in the ring and looking around at all these people that, some of which, like Bob Kelly and Curtis Smith, that I grew up watching. Guys like, you know, Randy and Jerry that I work with, people like that. It's just, it was amazing to me. And, you know, I was on cloud nine. I was just sacked up as close to the ring apron as I could so I could put my foot on the frame to open the ring glass so I wouldn't go fall. There were a whole lot of folks in that ring.
I'm glad it wasn't a Van Fleet ring. Before we go any further, guys, I'd like to say a special hello to George Fisher, who listens to us every week, and he's serving our country in Afghanistan. Like I said, special hello to him and all the guys, and hope God watches over all of them and protects them, but he listens to us every week.
No, that's great.
He can't call out to us. You know, he can't. There's no way he can do that, but he does listen to us every week, and I thank him for that and thank them for everything they do for us.
Amen, brother.
That made me really, really proud when I heard that today, that maybe we bring a little joy to somebody that far away doing something great for us.
Yeah.
That's absolutely fantastic. That makes me feel good.
It does. When I heard that this afternoon, I couldn't believe it.
Wow. Any wild animals loose on Poppy Island this past week?
Sure. I've got that so under control, they're scared to come out.
Did you find your coyote?
They told me the word. You know how word spreads. They almost told me he's going down Broad Street in Tybee the other night. I said, man, it wasn't Broad Street, it's another street, but it's like Broad Street. I said, really? Roll up my window and went on. It's fascinating, man. I could tell them that there's some kind of Ugandan something out there, and they'd believe it. And they'd be all over the island by noon. It's like telling something in the dressing room. You know how it does.
Tell them it's a rare Mongolian Shinanamaki.
Yeah. There's only about 8 in the world. It's amazing how people are, how people's mind just.
So you like have a badge or something that you carry?
Yes, sir.
Oh wow!
You got I look so official. It scares me when I look at myself. I like Bobby Simmons in that striped shirt. I'm an official. Well, I was sworn in and everything.
Wow.
Don't come down here to Tybee Island fooling around now.
why does Barney Fife come into my head when I'm listening to this? Do they give you one bullet?
Yeah.
What? And I got so many guns in the back.
I'm sitting here thinking, Michael, you asked him about the coyote. I kind of got a feeling if there was a coyote there, he wouldn't be looking for it anyway.
Yeah, somebody asked me what was I going to do about it, and I'm thinking, well, you know, since I don't have a deer rifle, and I don't know what. You know what? Probably a mangy dog, somebody saw.
Yeah. About 30 years ago or more, Bill Dromo asked me, they legalized bear hunting in Georgia.
I heard that story.
And he asked me, he says, you want to go bear hunting? And I said, no. And he said, why not? I said, because with mine and your luck, we'd find one.
Yeah, well, if I went, I know you would. I guarantee you that.
Oh.
We'll have time to get Ronnie Garvin on here and tell us about the time that he and Bob Kelly went moose hunting in Canada. And Bob had a .22 rifle.
22 rifle.
Wouldn't it ever make you mad?
When he kill the rattlesnakes they got down there, Tybee.
Ooh.
Oh man. Well, any you guys heard any news? Anyone? No deaths this week. At least not from the wrestling business. We lost a fantastic baseball player though.
Who?
Gary Carter, catcher for the Expos and the Mets.
You are kidding me.
Yeah, 57. I saw that on the internet.
7 years old, died of brain cancer.
Oh, my goodness. 57.
57, yeah.
What a ball player he was.
Yep.
Yes, he was. Horrible.
on a bad baseball team. Imagine if he had caught a break and been with a good team.
That is absolutely horrible.
Man.
Somebody said he was playing with the Expos, even though he wasn't Canadian. He was probably the most popular person in Canada.
I'm sure he was.
He was always one of those players that I always hate to see bump in the plate when they were the Braves. Because he was just him and somebody like Mike Schmidt from the Phillies and Andre Dawson with the Expos back in the day. They just killed
Bobby, whatever happened to the third baseman, Bob Horner?
You know, I have no idea. He was such a hot prospect, and you know, he hit. You know, his first time at bat as a Brave, he hit a home run, and then it sort of went downhill from there.
Did he ever turn out to be what they thought?
No.
He stayed with them a long time.
He was with them a long time, but he never developed into what they thought he was going to be.
He played at least one season in Japan. And he was doing so well over there that the pitchers quit pitching to him because they were afraid he'd break the all-time record over there that was held by a Japanese player. And they weren't going to let that happen, so they started walking him all the time. But he was very injury-prone.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. But, you know, as the older he got, he put on weight. I tell you, somebody who never... at least with the Braves, never turned out to be the prospect that they thought he was going to be with Ryan Plesko. I think he had some pretty good seasons with, was it San Diego he went to?
Yep.
Had some good seasons there, but, you know, again, when he first came up, you know, first couple months he was there, he was just a monster, and then he just petered out. So
sometimes those guys are flash in the pan, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. Have one good season, and that's it. It's sad.
But we had a few like that. And we had a few that we got after, you know, they were, especially pitchers. Look how dominant Bruce Sutter was till he came to the Braves. And then he couldn't find the strike zone to save his life.
Well, one of the prerequisites for being a consummate all-star MVP is you have to play for Atlanta and we trade you.
Hasn't that happened? Is that a fact?
You know, the NFL is adopting a rule that anybody who wins the Super Bowl has to come to Atlanta.
Yeah, that's to play quarterback.
Yeah, so you know.
I am going to get our guest on the line with us. I am looking forward to this, and it's a thrill every week because I get to have, you know, converse with you guys because you guys are, you know, people that I admired from a distance and as a fan and everything, and now I get to talk with you guys every week. But it's you know, that's a thrill for me every week. But our guest tonight, I saw live many times here in Mobile over the course of three or four years that he was in and out of here, and just hated him as a heel and loved him as a baby face. But, so he did his job right either way. So I'm going to get our guest on the line here. I'll have to give him a proper introduction once I get him on the line with the way they used to introduce him here. Again, bear with me on this.
Connie Moore, you stab him, we slab him.
Well, let me give you a proper introduction. As Don Griffith on Channel 3 TV in Pensacola used to say, the internationally famed and world-renowned Toast of the Coast, the one and only Gorgeous George Jr. Welcome to the show.
Well, appreciate the call.
Got Bobby Simmons and Jerry Armstrong with us as well, George.
Oh, great. What's going on?
Not much, not much. Just thrilled to have you on with us.
Where you guys at right now?
I'm in Mobile. Jerry's in Savannah, and Bobby's in outside of Atlanta.
And I'm in Aaron, Tennessee, home of the gorgeous one.
That's right.
Yeah. So, ask me some questions, and I'll tell you a bunch of lies. Well, I want to be a genuine professional.
Right in, trust me.
Huh?
I said, you're going to fit right in.
Well,
now, what year did you start?
What year?
Yeah.
Golly. I don't know. I got a day older since then. But I started down in Arizona, in Phoenix, Arizona. Where the promoter down there was Ernie Mohammed.
Okay.
And the guy that actually got me going was that was Sputnik Monroe's old brother, Bill Fletcher.
Bill Fletcher, yeah, the original, the first rocket.
Yeah. And that... And believe it or not, I run across him in a beer joint. Yeah, I don't know why I was in there. I think I was looking for my wife or something. No, I'm just kidding. But he says, you know, you ought to be a wrestler. Of course, old Bill, you know, he drank a lot. And he was pretty well oiled. And I said, I had a lot of fights in my day. I said, and I won them all. He said, well, that's good. He says, you'll fit right in the picture. And that's how it all started. And then I went on a big tour up in Montana, and from there, that was for Big Bear Productions out of California. And then I went to Canada. With a German, let's see, what was his name? He lived in Calgary. Anyway, we went up there and then we toured from one end of Canada to the other, from the West Coast to the East Coast. And then I got into a beef with Mickey Sharp. And I was going to break his head open with a tire iron. And the promoter stopped me, and he says, please don't do that. And the next day, they had me on an airplane, and they flew me into North Bay for Larry Kazabowski, who was a real super fine person. And
about the territory last week, and everybody that worked there loved that territory.
Yeah, it was beautiful. I'll remember one time we went up to a town called Wawa, W-A-W-A, and on the way up there we come across a herd of moose, and so of course, old stupid me, I stopped and got out and went to yelling and the carrying on. I didn't realize that it was mating season. And me with the blonde hair and good looks, he must have thought I was a mama moose or something, because here come that big fella out of the swampy area there. And he was roaring. I jumped back in the car and said, come on, you guys, just get out of here. I think we got company coming. And and it ain't Danny Hodge either. So anyway, then Wawa is a town where you go in There's only one road going into Wawa. That's how far up north it is. And when you get to the end of the town, you make a U-turn and come back out the same road you went in on. And right as you're coming into Wawa, there's a big statue there, or a big pillar, with a Volkswagen and the head of a moose halfway in and halfway out of the Volkswagen. And that was a for real thing. The moose attacked the Volkswagen. So anyway, we left out of there and made a ton of money. And then I got into a riot in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Canada. And my right arm, as I was blocking chairs, I run in there to get a guy out of the ring that was fixing to get dead. And I caught a chair across my right elbow, and it swelled up like a leg. And I couldn't shave, I couldn't do anything. So, and before I started all this, I was a musician. I had my own band, and we traveled all over the country also in that, but that's another story. And I hooked up with the guys that was playing in the club in the hotel where I was staying in North Bay, and I called up their booking agent, and I told him, I said, look, this is who I am, this is what I need to do, and so on and so forth, and he couldn't really believe it. He said, well, why don't you get on a plane or get in your car or come on down here to Toronto and visit? I said, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you just get in your little car or your plane and you come up here to North Bay? And, well, here you come. And so I shot him a deal. I said, I'd like to go on about a 7 or 8 week tour up here around this area to the different towns where I had worked at. And of course I was the gorgeous one, the baby face. And I said, I want the best hotel. They called them cabarets, I guess it was then, in each one of these towns. And I want to be booked for 2 weeks in each one. And then I want to do a repeat into each one of them. But I do not want to stay in one longer than 2 weeks. And he said, well, okay. So we started up. And we sold out every night. Excuse me. And they wanted us to stay for bigger money, and I said, no, we're going. We're already booked. And I said, but we can work it out where we can come back. Okay. And I went down to Buffalo and bought uniforms, sport coats, you know, and outfits to keep the guys looking really good in the band. So we looked like a top-notch outfit. So then that ended up where one of the guys in the band come to me and he said, Gorgeous, he says, we need to make a little bit more money. I said, oh, well, I said, let me ask you a question. What kind of money were you making when I joined up with you? They said $100 a week each. And I said, and the room and board. I said, well, that's pretty good money. I said, I'm paying you $400 a week and your room and board. And you want a little more money, huh? I said, okay, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll finish this tour, and then I'll leave and go back to wrestling. And you guys go on and do your thing. Well, of course, that didn't work. They fell apart. But now that kind of makes me sound like I was a hero. But I was the gorgeous one. Yeah.
Now,
so anyway, that's how that all started. And then I recorded.
You always run the same with Quincy George Jr.?
What's that?
I said, did you start with the name Gorgeous George Jr.? Or did you use any other name?
Yeah. Yeah, that's when I started. Then I went to Texas, and I recorded an album. Gorgeous George Jr. Sings the Texas Country Legends, and which was composed of songs like Walk Through This World With Me, One of These Days, Okie from Muskogee, Ruby Don't Take Gorgeous to Town With You. I Still Miss Someone, Supper Time, the old country, Texas country legends. And after I recorded that album, it sold in the arenas. I guess we sold somewhere around 20,000 in a week, which was fantastic. And then I recorded a single, a 45. It was a song that I wrote for the gal that I married, was married to her for 44 years. And the name of the song that I wrote was Love of One Girl. And of course, I just lost my wife here a year ago. She was the gal that made all my outfits. She was really a wonderful girl. All right, ask me a question.
Now, were you a wrestling fan before you got into the business?
No. Well, I wrestled on the carnival. I was kind of a tough kid. And I wrestled on the carnival on the hat show for Chief Little Eagle. And I took on all comers, either boxing or wrestling or what, you have it. And one that I always will remember, never will forget, was I fought this guy in Iowa, and he looked like Mr. America right off the poster. And he wanted a box. So, okay. Well, we got in there, and I popped him a couple of times, and all of a sudden he let loose on me. And what he did was he knocked me out, but my knees locked, and all I could do was hold my hands up and protect my face a little bit until the 3 minutes was up. He couldn't knock me out, couldn't knock me down, and he blew up, and then he regurgitated, you know how that goes. And we went back out on the valley and wanted a rematch for double the money, and he says, I wouldn't fight him if I had a 12-gauge shotgun in my hand. Because he worked so hard to knock me out, you know. But like I say, I was a little bit wild in my younger days. And so I really didn't know the conception of what wrestling was all about. And my first match that I had in Madison Square Garden in Phoenix, Arizona, when it was all over with, the promoter asked the guy that I worked with, he said, well, how did it go? He said, well, I've had easier street fights. You know, I was just a young kid going crazy.
Of course,
but
he was
anyway,
gone by the time you got into the business, but were you aware of the original Gorgeous George? You knew who he was and everything?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I was because Bill Fletcher, you know, the Monroe guy.
Right.
And then Pavel Katona. You remember Pavel Katona?
Yeah. Yeah, he was
okay, well,
there,
Pavel Katona was more or less the teacher or the man to look up to, and he was a tough old fella. Anyway, we talked and moved around and did a lot of stuff, and that's how it all happened, because it just seemed to come in there pretty easy for me.
Now, you hooked up and became friends with Iron Mike DiBiase somewhere along in that time frame as well, right?
Yes, I did. Iron Mike DiBiase died in my arms.
Yeah.
In Texas. It was his last match, and he called me G. As he walked by me, he said, G, I'll be right back. And he went to the ring. He was going to manage me. He was going to take me around the country and manage me. And he went to the ring, and of course I was standing out there watching. And he jumped out of the ring after a little confrontation. And then he went to get, they walked around one side of the ring. He turned around and walked back around the other side. Now, Iron Mike wasn't one to grandstand. He wasn't one of these show-off guys. He was a down-home, genuine, double-tough man. And he put his hand on the second rope and went to pull himself up and then fell back out of sight. I immediately, well, that's when you had a count to 20. Well, about 4 or 5, I knew something was wrong, and I took off running down to the ring, and he was laying there on the floor on his back, and he had his arms outstretched like a cross, and he hollered, gee. And he had a heart attack. And we rushed him to the hospital. And that was it. But he lived in an apartment right across the courtyard from me. So he used to sit there and watch me all the time. Of course, I had hot and cold running water, you know what I mean. But, yeah, what a beautiful man he was. And then, of course, his son was just a little guy at that time.
Right.
And he growed up to be a pretty doggone good guy.
Yeah, I think they missed the boat on not putting the NWA title on him. I would much rather see him as champion than Flair.
Yeah, I believe you're absolutely correct on that.
He had that old thing about it. He cared the way he cared himself.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He was done.
Yeah. And,
now, you mentioned working in Canada. That's where you came across Frenchy Bernard for the first time.
That is where I found Frenchy. What a story this is. See, I was staying over in Blaine, Washington, which is right across the border. And Frenchy used to just get right in my face back over in Vancouver and harass me. And I can't really say what he would say all the time, but the first word was mutter. And he called me this a dozen times, and he wanted to fight me and this and that. And so anyway, I said, just get away from me, you little skinny runt. And then in the evening, of course, I'd go back over to Blaine, Washington, where I lived. And then there was a club over there that I would go to, and here was Frenchie. And see, they called me Gaylord George there. And he said, "Gaylord, I want you to teach me some of them phony hold." I said, "Well, yeah, I can do that. What do you want to learn?" He says, "Well, right now I don't have time." He said, "How about next weekend?" I said, "Okay." I said, "But only under one condition." And he said, "What is that?" Of course, he spoke broken English, you know. And I said, "You have to bring me a case of that Canadian ale," which was strong stuff, and I kind of enjoyed it. So he said, "Okay." He said, "I know where you live." He was checking me out, you know. I said, "All right, just be over there whenever." So he showed up. So the first hold that I put on him was a figure four front face lock. I said, "Now, before I put the pressure on," I said, "when it gets too bad for you," I said, "just give me the office." He said, "The what?" I said, "Just pinch my leg, squeeze my leg a little bit, and that'll tell me that you can't handle anymore." "Ha, ha, ha," he said, "okay." Well, you know yourself, when you get a figure four front face lock on somebody and you start raising up on it, there ain't no way that they can give you the office.
Right.
And I held on to it until he went limp. And then, of course, I let go of him, and he stood up, and there was tears running out of his eyes, and he left. Well, the next day, he said, "Gaylord, I would like for you to show me some more of them phony hold." I said, "Oh, you didn't get enough of that first one, huh?" He said, "Well, yeah, but," he said, "I don't like that one." So what I did was I gave him a half Nelson with a chicken wing. And, of course, and I said, "Now, give me the office. Give me a little tap when it's too much." Well, of course, he couldn't do it because his arms were up in the air, right? And out he went again. And when that was over with, he said, "Gaylord, dem ain't no phony hold." he says, "Dem are real ones." And that's how I met Frenchie. And I asked him, I said, "How would you like to go down into the States with me and be my valet?" He said, "What do I got to do?" Well, at that time I had a brand new Cadillac Eldorado, and I said, "Well, first of all, you got to be my chauffeur. So then we'll go down to Phoenix, and then we'll go from there." So I'm sitting over there in the passenger side, and I'm sleeping, right? And all of a sudden, he slams the brakes on. Of course, I don't know how fast he was going. It couldn't have been more than 2 miles an hour in a truck stop. He slammed the brakes on right in front of a tractor trailer that was sitting there parked. And he said, "Gaylord, watch out." And as I opened my eyes, all I seen was the grill. Scared the living doo-doo out of me. He almost died right there. Because I know I almost died right there. And that's how Frenchie and I got all hooked up and stayed with me for quite a while. Excuse me.
Yeah, he was with you when you came into Mobile in 72.
Yeah.
You guys. And he was here even after you left. But he left when you turned babyface, I guess, towards the end of the year, he left. But he came back after you went down into Florida. he came back and managed Baxter and Gonzalez, and the pro and the medic.
Yeah, and, Tarzan Baxter.
And then stayed. And then he turned babyface and managed Mike Boyette, if you can imagine that combination.
Oh, well, I used to manage Mike Boyette and the California hippie. What was Mike Boyette's partner?
Mickey Dole.
Mickey.
Well, I finally dumped them as I wasn't going to manage them anymore up here in Tennessee, because when it come time, when the bell was ringing, both of them was gone somewhere. Boyette was teamed up with Cowboy Frankie Lane.
Yeah.
Do you remember him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, Frankie kind of liked the younger generation in the female department. And I'm trying to make this sound pretty, halfway decent. And Mike, he was always hitting the wacky tobacco.
Herbal medication. Herbal medication.
There you go. And I had to go out in the parking lot and locate these guys every time the bell was ringing. Finally, I'd had enough, and I just quit. And then they tried to shanghai me and get me back and gang me, but I was a little bit too smart for that. But anyway, I guess you knew that old Mike went to the penitentiary down there in Pensacola.
Yeah, he was receiving stolen property. He had a leather shop over in Pensacola, and he was getting his front defense stolen electronics out of it. But,
yeah, not only that, he had something to do with credit cards too.
Yeah.
Anyway, last year when I went to the reunion in Mobile, I took Tom Martin. He was a sheriff in Pensacola at the time when I lived down there. And Tom was telling me about what that was all about. And I said, well, that's kind of a shocking thing. He was living out in the woods, from what Tom told me. And, of course, that's right up the hippie's alley. He was a rugged kid too, believe it or not.
Well,
go ahead.
You were in and out of here from 72 when you first came in. You were in and out until 76. I'm going to throw a couple of little things at you and see if you remember.
Okay.
You remember Barbecue Billy and Gourmet George?
Bobby who?
Barbecue Billy and Gourmet George.
I do not.
That was you and Billy Spears when you got everybody all the time.
And they called me a Gourmet George?
Gourmet George, and called him Barbecue Billy, yeah.
Well, I remember Billy Spears. He died, from what I understand.
No, he's actually still alive. We just don't know where he is.
Pardon me?
I said, he's actually still alive, just nobody knows for sure where he is. We thought he had died, but then he contacted Bob Kelly and said we found out he was still alive, but nobody knows where he is. I've heard Pensacola, I've heard Jacksonville. I don't know for sure where he is.
Well, I heard that he died and that his wife died 1 week or 2 weeks right after that.
That was Greg Peterson.
Yeah, Greg Peterson.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. He was the one that, didn't he try to send out a contract on his wife?
Who's that? Billy
Spears.
I don't know. That's one I haven't heard.
Yeah, I can't really expound on that because I don't want to step on any toes, but you know how talk goes. But
the other thing that I remember you from here, do you remember Murder Incorporated? You and Spears, the Pro, and Duke Miller?
Oh, I remember the Duke. Had some wonderful times with the Duke. I'll tell you a little story about the Duke. The Duke and I was coming back from Dothan, Alabama. And he had a big Sherlock Holmes pipe. And I guess you know what went in that. So we fired up that pipe. And, of course, he was driving. He says, you want another pipe? I said, well, hell yeah. He said, okay. He said, here, grab a hold of the steering wheel. Well, I forgot I was driving, sitting over in the passenger side, and we went down in the ditch. That was really, really funny, but not too funny. And we went along a ways, and we're on a back road. He always liked to run them back roads. And I called him the Duck. Anyway, we seen a bunch of cars up ahead of us on this little old country road. And I said, hey, Duck, watch it. We got something going on up here. Well, as we got a little bit closer, there was, probably 8 or 10 black fellas under the hood of this car. And just as we got up alongside of it, the guy got in the car and bumped the horn, and the horn stuck, and everybody that had their head underneath that hood raised up and hit their head on the hood. And we laughed until we cried. We had to pull over and stop because we couldn't see the road. We were laughing so hard. And the guy hollers. He says, he called the guy by name. He says, re-neck the mudder. Re-neck the mudder. Tell him to re-neck the mudder, the horn. Golly, it was funny. We had some great times, the Duck and I. And then, you know, when we went to Mobile one time, there was a, I had been gone. And when I came back and I said to the people that I had seen the light. And I said, I want to apologize. I stood in the middle of the ring talking on the mic. I said, I'd like to apologize for all the bad things I said and done when I was here before, and I just want you to know that I'm a changed man. And just about that time, here comes the Duck, Duke, walking towards the ring, and now everybody's booing him, right? And so just to make these folks think the right thing, I made a gesture like, I'll knock you out, Duke. And he wouldn't get in the ring. Well, he was working against the guy with the white mask.
Baxter.
Say a name.
Tony Gonzalez? It's either the medic or the pro. Had to be one or the other.
It wasn't the pro. It was the medic.
Yeah, Tony Gonzalez.
And he was already in the ring. And the medic's looking at me. And I said, let's get him, you and me. Well, when Duke jumped into the ring, the medic attacked him. And I'm just standing over him, cheerleading him, right? And the people are going wild. And then when he had the medic in a bad way, I drop kicked him in the face, and this place exploded, because then Duke and I just demolished the medic. And my goodness, they moved the ring from the center of the building, the auditorium down there in Mobile, plumb over to the wall. and there was a cord hanging down from the ceiling, and Duke kept on looking at that cord. And I said to him, I said, Duke, if you grab that cord and try going up that cord, I said, I'll knock you out colder than a wedge. And then Tarzan Baxter came out of the dressing room with a 2x4, swinging that 2x4, and he's the only one that got us back to the dressing room. Of course, we was scratched up a little bit and cut up a little bit, but that was all right, part of the deal, you know. And but he saved us, that's for sure. Wow. Yeah, and of course, the reason I stayed there in that territory as long as I did is because my son was born in Pensacola at the Sacred Heart Hospital. Now, he's 39 now, and quite a guy. He bench presses 425 pounds. He wants to go to New York to fight that world's strongest man that they're advertising. You know who I'm talking about.
Mark Henry, yeah.
Yeah. I said, no, no. Huh?
I would love to. You just mark him up.
Oh, it was something else, you know. I said, no, you don't want to go there. I said, you know, I never really smartened the kid up, you know, fully all the way.
Right.
And, of course, when he was 9 years old, he wrestled the Tuffy Truesdale's bear down there in Pensacola. And what a tough little kid he was, but he blew up. He said, boy, I was sure glad when that guy took that bear off of me. It was quite a deal. But, all right, you had some more questions you wanted to fire at me.
Now, this is something that Jerry can relate to, because you spent quite a bit of time in Oklahoma as well, didn't you, making those lovely
yes.
short trips.
Some short trips, yeah.
Now, where was it that you mentioned tearing or wrecking Duke's car? You had a habit of that. Didn't you shoot the fender off of Jody Hamilton's car?
Well, this was in Phoenix. In Flagstaff, Arizona, this is before we left and went to Missouri. And I had a hair match, you know, where I lost the match and I had to cut my hair. And then I went as the Dick Marshall, the fighting Marine. And, but we're up there in Flagstaff, and we're working in a VFW hall. And if you want to slam somebody, their feet are up in the ceiling. So anyway, I had a couple of those little one-inch stink bombs. And I was always pulling jokes and stuff like that. And the assassins just loved it. You know, Jody especially. And Tom, he used to laugh so hard. But anyway, I chunked one of those stink bombs out in the audience right by ringside from the dressing room, and when it popped, the smell was horrible. And I hollered, gas leak, gas leak. Well, it emptied out the building. That big Indian, he weighed somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 350 to 400 pounds. He just sat there and never moved a muscle. And finally, they let everybody back in the building. And I chunked another one over there by the big Indian. And I hollered, the Indian filled his pants. The Indian filled his pants. Well, anyway, when we left there, we were coming down the mountain, going back to Phoenix, and a mountain lion run across the road, and Jody said, "Shoot it, shoot it." I said, "I ain't got a gun." He said, "In the glove box." He had a pistol in the glove box. And so I grabbed that pistol out of that glove box, and I stuck my head out the window, and I let off around, and it went into the front, right front fender and blew his headlight right out of his car.
I bet this is all wrong.
So, anyway, he said, I can't repeat what he said, but it was really funny. And then we went a little bit further, and here's a big old rattler crossing the road. He stopped. He said, "Give me that gun." He said, "I'll show you how to shoot this thing." Well, the rattler was curled up, coiled up in a wad right in the road, and he shot, and the whole snake went way up in the air and came back down motionless. I said, "Wow, good shot, Jody." I reached down to get a hold of the tail, and what he had done was he had shot the tail off and not the head, and that snake struck at me. When it did, I jumped back and I went over the edge of the road, and I must have went down 20 or 30 feet rolling over the shot rock till I finally come to a stop, and I was bleeding from head to foot. And Jody standing up there on the road laughing at me. I said, "Give me that gun. Let me show you how to really ventilate that front end of your car." But anyway, then after I lost that match, my hair match there, we went to St. Joe, Missouri, and I stayed with Jody and his wife, Rose, I believe her name was. She was really a nice lady. And then Jody and I went against Bob Brown and Geigel. And they were pounding the daylights out of us. Both left us outside the ring. And Jody says, "Okay, it's time." We hit the ring. I went up over the top rope, and Jody went down through the bottom rope into the ring. And when I landed on the edge of the mat that was under the tarp and twisted my knee, and it just tore it all out. And I stood there in the corner going, "Ah," you know. And here comes Bob Geigel. He come over and he grabbed a hold of me, and I said, "My leg is broke." He said, "Don't worry about it." Of course, he knew how to do what he did. And excuse me. That was on TV. And so then the next night we worked in the house match in St. Joe, not St. Joe, but St. Louis, I believe it was. Kansas City, St. Louis, yeah. And in order for me to get to the ring, what happened was when they rang the bell and Brown and Geiger got to the ring, they turned all the lights out in the building, and Jody picked me up and run down to the ring with me. And when the lights came back on, we were standing in the ring. And Jody says, "I'll take care of it from here." But just one of the high spots of my career.
Now, you were in Oklahoma when the fan came in and cut Donovan, weren't you? Jack Donovan?
Yeah, I was there.
You was in that match?
Oh, yes. I was, and what was so bad about it was I don't know, was I in the match? Anyway, it was a six-man, and three guys, Danny Hodge, Jack Donovan, and whoever the other ones was, had red tights on. Well, we got one of them guys and into the corner, and here a farmer jumped up in there, and he went to slicing. He cut Danny in the legs, you know, in the inside of his thighs, trying to get them big veins.
Yeah.
Of course, Danny was so damn tough, he must have dulled the knife after the first cut. But anyway, everybody was bleeding like a dog except me. I was the only one that emerged. When the dust settled, I emerged unscathed. How's that?
Yeah, I know Jack carried the scars on his legs, too, for the rest of his career.
Yeah, yeah. And that one fight up there in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, when I went to save a guy, I was holding his guts in him because he got sliced from one side of his belly to the other.
Jeez.
And I was behind him, and I had my arms around him holding his belly shut. Oh, yeah. It got a little bit hairy at times, but, you know, how that goes. But anyway, I got pretty good shape in Oklahoma, and of course Tom and Jody was in the office, and of course you know what that means, and so Jack Briscoe and I was tag team champions. Haystack Calhoun and I was tag team champions. Let's see, there was a couple others that they tagged me up with, and we all always got to be the champions. But anyhow, then we worked a spot way down south in Louisiana. I believe it was Houma, maybe. You know, a short trip, a day and a half drive.
Huh.
Yeah, and that's when Big Bill, was it Bill? The big guy from Oklahoma.
Watts.
Bill Watts. He was running stuff. Well, after that night down south, then we were on our way back up to Shreveport, I believe it was Shreveport. And I was running by myself. And a fan, one of the belts, come off and broke a bracket, in Jackson. We went to Jackson, Mississippi. And by the time I got everything fixed and got there, of course, the matches were over, and Killer Carl Cox took my place, and he got hurt, and Big Bill decided he wanted to get even with me because him and Coxie was good buddies. And so I had to work the next week with the Olympic guy. He went into the pill vitamin business later on. What was his name? Big
Husky.
Who?
Dale Lewis.
You got to say it again.
Dale Lewis.
No, not Dale.
Ken Patera.
Yes, Ken Patera.
Okay.
I had to work with him, you know, of course, do the job. And he told Ken, he says, when it comes time, which Ken's finish hold was full Nelson, he says, I want you to break George's neck. And Ken told me this. I said, well, what do you want to do? Because if you say you're going to break my neck, I ain't getting in there, you know, of course. He said, no. He said, just sell. I said, all right, is that a promise? He said, yeah. So I sold the living hell out of it, and I guess Big Bill got his jollies over that. But That wasn't a good thing. That was my last match in the Oklahoma territory. But what else you got for me?
And that was when? What year? You remember?
Pardon me?
Do you remember what year that was?
No. No, I sure don't.
Because Patero was there when I got there, in 77.
Well, it was in that era. Of course, Patera, Ken, was good buddies with Big Bill. But I really couldn't tell you when that was. It was shortly after I was in Missouri, St. Joe, and that area with Jody. Because Jody and Tom came into the territory then, into Oklahoma, and they got in the office. And, of course, we did really good business. And then they left out. Of course, I was still there, and that didn't set too good with Big Bill. He really didn't like me from the start. But that's life.
And you spent some time down in Florida with Bobby Shane as well, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Bobby Shane and I were tag champions we were tag team champions over in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And we was really doing good, and the promoter there, Jim Z, I guess everybody knows Jim Z, right? Jim Barnett.
Oh, yeah.
He
patted me on the butt one day in the dressing room. He says, "Gorgeous, my champion." I guess my face turned a little bit red on that one. But anyway, Bobby Shane and I was tag team champions then. And Jim Barnett told the guy that was doing some managing in there at that time, what the heck is his name?
Gary Hart?
Yeah. Told him to manage him and I. And he said, "No, I ain't going to do it." And Jim says, "Well, if you ain't going to do it," because he was managing the Samoans at the time, too. And he said, "Well, if you ain't going to do it, just pack your stuff and get out." And he packed and got out. So, and then, what's his name, suplexed me into the bottom rope on TV and broke my shoulder. He passed on here a couple of years ago now.
Tim Woods.
Who?
Was it Tim Woods?
Tim Woods. And so Jim took care of me for the longest time. And then I really don't remember where I went or what I did after that. But maybe you can refresh my memory.
Well, see, I know Shane ended up in Australia for a while. Did you go over there with him?
Yeah. In fact, when I went to Australia, every big TV show wanted me for an interview of some sort. And right at that time, Bobby Shane was already there. Well, Bobby Shane and I flew over there together. But anyway, after a few weeks of going around and around, there was a airplane strike, a petroleum strike, a trucker strike, and the business kind of fell apart. And I said to, I think his name was Tony Colone, the promoter.
Yeah.
I said, "I'll tell you what you do. Is there a crippled children's hospital here in Australia somewhere?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Set it up where I go to the crippled children's hospital." And I said, then leave the rest of it up to me. He said, okay. Well, I went to the Crippled Children's Hospital, and there was this little Johnny. The poor little kid, they couldn't get him into a barber shop. They couldn't get him in the swimming pool. They couldn't get him in the dentist's office. And when I walked in and seen little Johnny, he reminded me of my son, who was at that time 4 years old. And I picked him up, and he just hung on to me. I took him into the swimming pool. I took him to the dentist's office. I took him to the barber shop. And it hit me so hard that when I got back to the hotel, I started drinking because I had to get this, you know, I wanted to pass out. I was crying. I felt so bad for this little guy because he screamed and cried when I left. And Ernie Siegley had a show, which was just like the one we had over here for so many years, and the guy finally retired. The heck was his name, the night show?
Johnny Carson?
Yes. Ernie Siegley's show was like Johnny Carson's show, only Ernie had a bigger show because it went into a whole lot of different places. Anyway, I was supposed to be on his show. Couldn't get there because of the airline strike and the petrol strike and this and that. So finally, after three cancellations, I rented a airplane that flew me where was it? The main city is...
Sydney.
Is what?
Sydney.
Sydney, yeah, and then the other one is what?
Melbourne,
all right. Flew me in there, and I hooked up with this guy that owned a beauty shop. He owned a string of beauty shops. He fixed my hair, and I rented a powder blue velvet suit. As I walked in to the Ernie Siegley show, he stood up and he went, oh, oh, and he was starstruck. Well, I got goosebumps a foot deep on my body, you know, and finally, I had my valet, which was the hairdresser that owned the shops. I had him spraying powder in the room, and Siegley sat down, and I'm standing there, and I said, well, are you not going to invite me to sit down? Oh, I'm so sorry, George. I said, no, it's gorgeous. So anyway, I sat down, and we started talking, and he had a big audience in there, and there was a guitar sitting over there in the corner. And I said, whose guitar is that? He said, it's yours if you want it. I said, no, I don't want it. I just want to play it and sing a little song to little Johnny. And I sang that song, two arms to hold me tight, two lips to kiss goodnight, two eyes that shine so bright, that little boy of mine. By the time I got to that, everybody in the audience was crying, including Ernie Siegley himself. And then the next day, they had a dog race, Greyhound dogs, and I was the guest there with a couple other wrestlers, and I was broke up because I wanted to go home with my son, but I couldn't, you know. And so I had a few nips, a few dozen nips, And these two other wrestlers, kind of one on each side of me, kind of helped me on out to the podium. And that's when I made an announcement. If everybody would stick their hand in their pocket, come out with just a dollar. I said we could help out this Urella Cripple Children's Hospital because the government had to double. In other words, if you gave them a dollar, they had to put in two, which made three, of course. And I raised $175,000 for Urella Cripple Children's Hospital. Well, I became a guy like Elvis Presley. I could not go anywhere without protection because people would mob me. You know, they just wanted me. I was their hero. And we sold out. You couldn't move in the place. And that's where I met Billy Dundee. Do you remember Billy Dundee?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He was a water boy. He came to the ring when I was standing in the ring. He came to the ring with his bucket, with a jug of water and a towel. And I said, "What's that?" He said, "That's for you." I said, what do I want that for? You know, I never had nothing like that before. But that was their style. You know, that's what they did. And, of course, it broke the wrestling wide open again, and which was good. And they wanted me to stay for double the money, and I was making really, really big money then at that time. And I said, "I'm sorry, I gotta apologize to you, but I got to go home to my son." And that's where I went, to my son, and they were in Amarillo, Texas.
Now, were you in Florida when Bobby, because Bobby had only been back in the States a couple months when the plane crash happened. Were you in Florida at that time, or were you in Texas?
I was supposed to ride in that airplane.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, I was supposed to be in that airplane when it went down. And, of course, Bobby and I was going to start touring. And because what we had done together got over really big, and there was a lot of talk about it. I guess it did anyway. Anyway, that was the end of my buddy Bobby. And Buddy Colt, then later on I teamed up with Buddy Colt. And we did really good together. You know Buddy Colt.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys were in Texas together as well, weren't you? You and Buddy?
Uh-huh. Yeah. And we teamed up together and really did good. We're up there in Amarillo. And I still talk to Buddy quite often. You know, he's living down in Tampa.
Right, right.
And
he used to come to the Mobile reunions quite often. He hasn't been in a few years. But,
right, he hasn't. And I asked him why, and he said, "Well, you know, things financially got, you know, pretty stuck." And he was the type of guy that always watched his nickels and dimes pretty good. I mean, he wasn't a tightwad. He was just a good thinker. You know,
right.
And took care of business real well. And he even sold his big boat that he had because he had a place right there on the lake. And we're on the Gulf. And but anyway, he's still selling bolts, nuts and bolts, but not every day like he used to, you know, just now and again.
Right.
But other than that, what else you got, buddy?
Well, I one of our listeners, and he sent me a message early. He was hoping to call in, but he works the night shift, so he wasn't sure whether or not he was going to get a chance. But he's a big Southeastern. No. One of our listeners, a friend of mine named Teddy Baker. He's a big fan big Southeastern fan, especially the Knoxville area. And he asked me to, in case he didn't get a chance to call in, he wanted me to ask you about a couple of things. He said he had a valet there named Sir Reese in Knoxville, and he wanted to know who that
Reese.
Was.
Reese was my wife's brother. We called him Reister. And he was my valet there in Knoxville. And I told him, I said, now don't be out here messing around with any of these lizards. We'll just call it that. And because I said the promoter, you know, we have to keep ourselves a little more aloof and not commonplace. And he was just a young kid. And then I happened to look out the window, and there he was hiking off into the parking lot with some little lady. And when he came back, I didn't say anything to him. And we got in the car, and I said to him, I said, Reeser, did you go out to the car with some girl? Oh, he said, did you see me? I said, yeah. I said, I got to tell you something right now. This is terrible. I said, that little girl that you went out there with has a venereal disease. He said, oh, no. I said, oh, yeah. What am I going to do? I said, well, when we get home, I said, you go upstairs to the bathroom. This is terrible. This makes a real heel out of me. I said, you go up to the bathroom, and you get that bottle of alcohol, and you reach down there, and you just wash yourself off real good. And all of it, and I'm sitting downstairs with my wife, and all, which is his sister, and all of a sudden he starts to scream. She said, what's the matter? I said, he's up there washing. Then I had to tell her what it was all about. And I said, well, I think you've killed all the disease. This is terrible, you know, awful. Yeah, and then I started up a vending machine company there in Knoxville. And I was giving a certain amount of the proceeds to the junior deputy program. And they made me an honorary deputy with a badge and a card, you know, a commission card. And I got caught speeding a number of times, and I'd call the guy over and I'd say, hey, keep this down a little bit. I said, I'm working narcotics undercover. Oh, okay, go ahead and go. So that badge got me out in a little bit of trouble, too. Yeah.
The other thing Teddy wanted to know about is when you were managing the Stomper, the deal that you guys did, where he broke the cement block over Joe LaDuke's head.
Right.
I don't know if you remember that angle and how that all came about.
Yeah, I was supposed to do the hammer on Joe's head because I did it on Archie's head. And when I raised up to bring the big sledgehammer down, of course, the Mongolian, grabbed the hammer, the sledgehammer, and brought it down on Joe's head. Well, when he did, Archie, he was a little bit of a stiffer anyway. He was a little bit rough on that one. And it hurt Joe pretty good. I guess he went into the hospital, and about, I don't know, a number of $1,000 later, he got out of there, which had drove his head in, it jammed his spine up a little bit. from what I understand. I don't know how much of that is true, but anyway. But did the guy that you're talking about ask about when I dressed up like a woman and sat at ringside?
No, he didn't ask about that one.
Yeah, you gotta. What happened was the Tennessee Stud was working against the Stomper, and I would always get in the way, and they finally come up with I was banned from the arena. Well, I went to the matches with my wife. I had high heels on. I had a dress on. I had lumps up here, you know, making myself look like a girl. And I had lipstick and all that on, and I wore a woman's hat. And I sat right at ringside with my wife. Nobody knew me. And when the Stud put the figure four leg lock, I believe it was, on I called him Mongi, on the Stomper, I jumped up and started crawling into the ring. And, of course, the Stud, he reaches over and grabs me by the hair while he ended up with a wig in his hand. And when he did, I hit him in the face with a bottle of ink. Well, let me tell you something now. That blew the lid right off the top of the business there. You couldn't get close to the building to get in. There were so many people wanting to see me dead. And an FBI agent who was a good friend of Fuller, Ron, he said, do you want me to take care of this? And Ron says, no, I'll take care of it myself. And, well, then, you know, time went on, and I sold out my vending machine business, and I went back to Nashville. And got in the construction business. That was when the end of it, summer of 80, I believe it was. And I became a superintendent for Rittenbach out of Knoxville. They're the ones that built Neyland Stadium. And they were a big outfit. And I was a superintendent for them. I worked for them for 12 years. And then got out of that, and the guy that lived across the street owned a trucking company, Haynes Trucking. And he said to me, he said, George, he said, how about driving a truck? I said, I can't drive a truck. He said, come on, I'll show you. So I rode with him a couple times. I said, yeah, I'm a truck driver, man. And I started driving truck my first trip out of the yard. I sideswiped the garage from one end of the trailer all the way to the back end of the trailer. Anyway, that was my beginning of driving truck. And I got out of that because I was staying up day and night, and I got to the point where I was getting a little bit nervous and a little bit afraid because I was falling asleep out there on the road, and that was no good.
Yeah.
But anyway, any other questions? Huh?
No, that's pretty much it. I'm just going to throw some names at you, people that I know you cross paths with, and just get your impression. How about Ken Lucas?
Oh, yeah, Ken Lucas. What a guy. What a guy Ken Lucas was. I really loved him like a brother. His wife, who died of cancer, we lived in the same apartment complex, and I had a match. We had a feud thing going, and of course, My forehead was an easy target for you know what.
Yeah.
And Ken and I was on TV, and I said, okay, and bang, and I hit it, and the blood shot through the air all the way over to the announcer's table, and it looked like a slaughterhouse. Well, you know, that scared them guys, Kelly and Fields and them. They wouldn't bring it back. It was the hottest thing they'd ever had. And they wouldn't bring it back because they were afraid of it. I said to them, I said, well, you're afraid of this, and you won't bring it back, and the hottest thing going. I said, but you'd tar and feather Burrhead Jones down there in Mississippi when I told you that wasn't going to get it and that you would lose your TV, and sure enough, that's what happened. They lost their TV down there. But sometimes they can't see the woods for the forest, or the forest for the woods.
Well, there was another name, Bob Kelly. I know you, I saw
Bob you. Bob Kelly and his bulldog. Okay. I was at a reunion there, and I walked out, and I just sat down in the middle of the floor and started shivering and shaking. And he ran up to me and said, George, what's the matter? What's the matter? I said, oh, I must have had a relapse of Ken Lucas putting a sleeper on me. I went to sleep for a minute. You know, crazy me. And then another time I was walking and I took a head dive, dove head first forward down and rolled over. And they ran over, what's the matter, George? What's the matter? I said, Kelly just bulldogged me. Yeah, I was always full of crap, you know. But, yeah, I know them two fellers.
All right, how about Curtis Smith? You two team quite a bit down here.
Oh, yeah, old Curtis. When he would load the boot?
Yep.
Yeah, old Curtis, what a nice person. You couldn't ask for a nicer person than Curtis. In my book. Huh?
I said he hasn't changed a bit. We just saw him last, Bobby and I just saw him last weekend in Villarica, Georgia. And
wow. How's he doing?
He's had a few little health issues, but for the most part, he's doing real well. He's doing real well.
Well, fantastic. He was just really, like I say, you couldn't have asked for a nicer person than he. And, of course, I had a few health issues myself. You know, I had open-heart surgery, and when I retired from wrestling, I retired from the razor blade from shaving, and I grew a beard that went plumb down to my belt buckle. Of course, I had the long hair, and I was driving truck, and then I had a heart attack. I went into the doctor's office here at Aaron. I said, Doc, I said, there's something wrong with me. I don't know what it is, but I got a backache. I've had it for a day and a half now. He took a blood sample. He said, oh, my gosh, get up there on the gurney. I said, what's the matter? He said, you're having a massive heart attack. I said, you are kidding. How do you know? I knew the doctor real well. He was a super guy, still is. And so he explained it to me. I said, okay, listen. I said, I've had this thing going for a whole day, a night, and now this is a half a day. I said, I'm going to run home, run back to the house. I said, I'm going to feed my animals. And I said, I'm going to call my wife, who was in Amarillo visiting her mother at the time, and change clothes, take a shower, change clothes. I'll be right back. He said, you can't do that. I said, why? He said, you're having a massive heart attack. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to do it anyway. He made me sign a piece of paper, and away I went. I came home, took a shower, changed clothes, called my wife, and fed the animals, and then I drove back to the hospital. Got back to the hospital, and I said, Doc, I said, do you feel okay? He said, why do you ask? I said, well, you're as white as a sheet. He says, I could have swore I would never, ever see you alive again. Well, I said, instead of just standing there arguing with me, are you going to do something about it? And he said, all right, get up on that gurney right there. I got up on the gurney, and they run a line into my hand, and I died right there. I died right there, and the lady that was standing over me when I died, I told her, I said, Gladys, her name is Gladys Anderson, God bless her. I said, I think I'm going to leave you. I said, would you do me a favor and tell my family that I love them very much and I'm sorry I had to go? And that's when I died. Well, it wasn't but a few seconds later and I came back. And she was standing over me crying. I said, Gladys, are you still here? She said, Gorgeous, don't you ever do that again. I said, okay, I won't. And they hauled me off and had open heart surgery, a triple heart bypass, and I went in the recovery room, and I was out of the recovery room in 30 minutes, where it normally takes a number of hours, because I was really in good shape, other than the blockage. And I said, Doc, I said, I got to have something to eat. I said, I got to have something to eat. So he finally sent me back to my room. And the minute they walked out of the room, I took everything off that I had hooked up to and went down the hall and started visiting. Because I had no pain. I had no pain. I was dead. You know, from my neck all the way down to my waist, I couldn't feel nothing. You know? And then all of a sudden, over the loudspeaker, it came up, George Wagner, please return to your room immediately. I told the guy I was talking to, I said, well, I think I'm in trouble. So I went back to the room, and the doctor was sitting on my bed. He said, Gorgeous, you can't do that. I said, what? He said, you can't leave just like that and unhook yourself. I said, why? He said, you just had major surgery, open heart surgery, and I had your heart right in my palm of my hand. I said, Doc, did you do it? He said, yes, I did. I said, well, I ain't got nothing to worry about then, do I? You know, I just was a little bit crazy. And it must have been all those bulldogs and sleepers I had to go through. Yeah. But anyway, that was my health issue.
When did you change your name to George Wagner?
In Oklahoma. Because I had so many people saying, well, hey, you're not George Wagner. You're not Gorgeous George. You're so-and-so. And so there was this lady who owned the motel there. Her name was Cleo Epps. She was a real sweetheart, and she knew George Wagner well. I says, I've got to change my name to George Wagner. George R., George Richard Wagner. She said, okay. I said, what do I got to do? She said, you don't have to do nothing. Just go down there and tell them who you are, and they already know. They'll have the paperwork already set up for you. She was a multimillionaire, which she ended up, some guy threw her down a well and broke her neck, and they shot her, and bad deal there. But anyway, that's when that started.
Were you ever contacted by any of the family members of the original?
Yes, I was. When I came out of Canada, I came down through Washington State, and the next state below that, which was what?
Oregon. Tell me, Darren, you've been there.
Yeah, Oregon. I guess it was Oregon, yeah. Anyway, when I'd go to the ring, I'd have a orchid corsage pinned on me. And when I'd walk into the ring, I'd walk around, you know, do the prance like the Gorgeous One did. And then I'd pick somebody out of the audience, and I would pin the orchid on them. Well, this woman, this gal, started screaming and hollering. She said, "I want the orchid. I want the orchid. He was my daddy. He was my real daddy." And now I'm having a fit, right? And I didn't pin it on her. As soon as the match was over with, I got the dickens out of the building, and the promoter at that time, I can't think of it, it was a couple brothers.
Yeah, I
got a little bit upset with me for doing that. And then they said I had to meet with the people the next time in there. Well, which I did. Then they were talking about suing me, and I said, well, I said, really, you don't want to open up a can of worms? I said, because George's first wife, who just loved me, she came down to Odessa, Texas, and seen me in the ring. She was good. She was good friends with Rough and Rowdy Pat O'Dowdy. Do you remember that name?
Oh yeah.
He was the promoter there, and George's first wife was good friends of O'Dowdy, and she was in the audience. And when I came out there and did my little thing, she started to cry, and she said, if I didn't know better, I would say that was George himself. But, yeah, that's it, buddy.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And, you know, the guy that's got the wrestling reunion here in Nashville, Scott Teal,
yeah.
Scott is one of the nicest people you would ever in your entire life want to meet. Scott and his wife worked so hard to put this all together, and with big smiles constantly. And I just want to say, you know, hats off to Scott Teal and his wife for such a job well done. This last year, 2011, they had me dress up with one of my jumpsuits. And when he came out to make an announcement out on the steps and all the retirees are sitting out there, they started playing Pomp and Circumstance. And, of course, he knew it. And he turned around. He said, what's going on? What's going on? And I came out through the door prancing, you know, like, oh, George. But I had a beard plumped down to my waist. And if you ever dial that up, I don't know if you have or not, but you dial up Tennessee Wrestling Reunion 2011, and you'll see me in my jumpsuit handing out gold bobby pins to some of the old boys.
Well, we need to get you in a jumpsuit and Dundee in one of his, and we'll have an Elvis impersonator.
Yeah, well, I've cut my beard off, and my long hair off, and I did that so that the women wouldn't be chasing me, and I got them by the dozens now. I don't know what to do.
Nice problem to have.
I know it's awful. And I'm just kidding, but. Yeah, I would do that. I would do that wherever and whenever. You know, I've got all my jumpsuits here, and I still have all my boots. And of course, I'm still gorgeous. I'm only 74, but I'm gorgeous.
Are you coming back to Mobile this year?
I was going, but my son is not feeling well, and I just want to leave. He raises pit bulls, and he's got one here that's big enough to ride. I mean, I feed him chicken wings out of my mouth. I hold my mouth out there, and he'll take a chicken wing out of my mouth, and his head is twice the size of mine. people always think that those pit bulls are such dangerous animals. Well, they are if you're not trained right. And then I got its little daughter laying here on my bed while I'm talking to you guys. I'm surprised that she hasn't...
We were talking about Frenchie earlier. Do you keep in contact with Frenchie? Or have you spoken to him?
No, I lost track of Frenchie when he went to work for Andre the Giant. And I have no earthly idea how to contact him. And I just more or less, you know, just when I got out, I got away from it. And I just started going to this reunion business, you know, and saying hi to a few of the gang, like Jerry and his brother, the Kozak brothers. And of course, the gang that comes in down there at Mobile. And then, of course, the ones that are up here in Tennessee that go to this reunion. And it's just kind of fun and nice to see the old gang. A lot of them are walking around with canes and things like that. And the good Lord has blessed me and kept me around and won't let me use a cane. So, that's it.
Well, you've got a ton of fans that remember you, including me. I remember.
Well,
I'm not making you feel old or anything, but I called you quite a few names when I was a young man.
Yeah. Well, at least you didn't call me away from those big payoffs I got down there in Tennessee. I mean, down there in Mobile. Hey, I went to one place up there when I was living in Arizona for Big Bear Productions. You know that town way up there, way north, that not in Arizona, but way, way up there where they had a boxing match, a world's heavyweight champion, and it broke the town?
I can't
think of the name of the town. But anyway, we traveled all the way up to that town, and there was 12 people in the audience.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. I said to the Russian, I said, how in the hell do we do this? He said, just pretend there's 12,000. I said, oh, that's easy. Yeah, that's easy, all right. Had to borrow money in order to get gas to get back home. Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, I wouldn't trade it for nothing.
Yep, we say that every week, don't we, guys?
Yep.
Sure enough.
Well,
sure
Bobby
enough,
Jerry,
brings back a lot of memories and a lot of good times and... Especially one time when Sputnik Monroe and I was coming out of a town called Miami, Oklahoma, or something like that. I don't know. No, Miami, Arizona. Anyway, the minute the matches were over, and there wasn't enough there to buy the six-pack of beer, but we bought a couple. And there was a one-way bridge, the overpass thing, a railroad trestle above it, and only one vehicle could travel through there at a time. So as we came through there, old Sputsy slung a six-pack of empty bottles out the window and landed right on the hood of a trooper, state trooper. I went, oh, my goodness. I pulled over immediately, and he drove up there, and he got out, and he looked, and he said, Gorgeous George and Sputnik Monroe. He said, what are you guys doing? I said, you know, I said, we didn't make enough people mad in that building there, and I said, Sputnik, now it's all his fault. I said we got to make some enemies going home, and I think we did. This guy laughed and laughed and laughed, and he said, I said, I guess we're going to jail. He said, no. He said, just go back there and clean off my hood. And don't do that anymore. Okay. Oh, yeah. Good times. Good times.
Well, Bobby, Jay, do you guys have anything for George before we wrap up?
I'm good. I just apologize for barking in everybody's ear tonight.
Oh. I didn't know. I thought I was only talking to one guy.
Oh.
No,
well, he gets carried away like somebody else we know sometimes.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the only time I ran across you, George, was in Georgia here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where were you several times here in Georgia?
That's when old Jimsy patted me on the butt and he says, my champion, gorgeous, my champion. Well, I guess my face turned as red can ever be. You know. Of course, you know why, but, yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to ask that I might be able to expound on?
No, I think that's it. We certainly appreciate you being on with us. If you're willing to, we'll certainly have you on again.
Well, that's fine. Just let me know in advance. And I sat here on pins and needles waiting for that phone to ring. I thought it was supposed to be 7 o'clock, and then it started getting past there and past there and past there, and I thought, well, my goodness, maybe I missed the phone or something. I had it in my hand. But now Scott Teal, he said he was going to download this conversation. He said, and it would probably take him all the way up north, because, you know, he drives through UPS.
Right, right.
Take him all the way up north and all the way back again. So anyway, hats off to Scott Teal and his wife, and a great job they're doing keeping this all alive.
Yes, it is. It's an amazing job that he does for, you know,
Yeah. Maybe you guys can show up for the reunion this year.
Well, the only place I ever worked in Tennessee was in Chattanooga, and that was for the Georgia office. Jerry never made it to Tennessee.
Well, I'd show up anyway, because he don't charge no color card.
But, yeah, we can do that and say Charlie Smith invited
hey,
him.
And if he gives you a hard time, we'll just work him over.
That's right.
And take all of his food.
I'll hold it and you can both of us.
That's well, no, we're going to have to get Kelly up there for that one. And then as he goes to the ground, we'll get Lucas to put the sleeper on him, and then we'll really work out on that grocery pile. And it's amazing, too, believe me. All right, you guys, listen, it's really been a pleasure, and it's been a lot of fun. And I got a lot more stories, but I got a couple hours older since I started out with you guys. And I'm only 74, but hey.
We're glad you're still doing well, man.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, the good Lord blessed me. Yeah.
Well, George, it's been a pleasure, and we will definitely plan on having you on again, and we'll give you a little bit of notice so you can write some. You're not like Dick Steinborn. We tell Dick Steinborn, he comes on with a book. We have to.
Oh, yeah, Steinborn. Good old Steinborn. Dickie, I still got a reel, a fishing reel, that he loaned me over in Puerto Rico when I came over there. I really like Dickie. And one other thing real quick, like, the bell rang, and I run to the ring with my robe on and everything, and when I went to open up my robe to show the people my gorgeous body, I felt kind of cold. I looked down there, and I forgot to put my tights on. And Dickie's dad, Milo. He said, "You stupid kid, you." He said, "What is wrong with you, you dumbbell?" All right, you guys, I'll let you go. God bless you all, and be careful, and maybe you'll show up for the reunion up here in Tennessee.
All right, well, and hopefully, I know you can't come this year, but hopefully we'll get you back down to Mobile sometime the next year or so.
Yeah, hopefully next year I'll be able to come down there.
All right. Well, we appreciate it again, George. Thank you very much for coming to the show with us.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It was my pleasure, believe me. Take care, you guys.
Thank you. Good night,
George.
You bet. All righty. Bye-bye.
Well, I'm sorry, guys. I didn't mean to hog all the conversation. I was trying to save Bobby's voice there.
Oh, you did good.
You did a good job.
Thank you. Thank you. And as always, this was fun. This was fun. Next week, hopefully, I haven't touched base with Bo. I know he was still suffering a little bit with the illness that he got over the weekend. But hopefully he'll be well enough to do the show. Or the plan is for Bo James and Bill Dundee to be on with us next week. I'll touch base with them first part of the week and make sure that that's still the plan. Otherwise, we'll have to back up and pump, but we'll make something happen anyway. And as always, it's been a pleasure being on with you guys each and every week. It's a thrill. Absolute thrill.
Well, Bobby, I hope you get to feeling better, brother.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. Again, I apologize for barking all night. I'm just...
no problem.
Hopefully, I'll be better next week.
You'll be better. In two more weeks, you'll be here. You and Charlie going to run by some Tybee Island and just let Jerry follow you on his scooter.
That'll work. His little golf cart.
Hey, if you get stopped, just whip out Jerry's bands like George said he did.
We're on a drug raid.
I love it.
All right, guys. Well, thanks again, and then we'll get together and do this again next week. Appreciate it, guys.
Sounds good. Good night, guys.
Take care. Take care.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast. A production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.